Let me use a clickbait to set up this episode of Cut the Clutter. Do you know the meaning of SMS? What does SMS stand for? You will say, of course. What kind of clickbait is this? This insults our intelligence. It's short messaging service. But it isn't quite that. When the Chinese use this, particularly in the context of their larger, deeper strategic thought and how it's evolving year after year after year. Say, between 2017 and 2020, the three Xi Jinping years, how has this evolved? Because these have been among the most important years in China's history strategically since, I would say, the departure of Deng Xiaoping, which was a long time back. Now, SMS in this context means science of military strategy. What is this science of military strategy for the Chinese and where does it come from? So we have help from a think tank that we have leaned on in the past as well for our episode 672. That is when the same institution had picked out a 2013 Chinese study, hitherto not discussed because it was written in their own language. It had not been read and analyzed, but they translated that fully into English and analyzed that. And from that, I had drawn some conclusions on how the Chinese view India strategically. Now, the same institution, which is China Aerospace Studies Institute, Air University in the US, is run by the US Air Force at Maxwell Air Base, Alabama. And this is a preeminent think tank in many areas, a real strategic intellectual powerhouse. Now, they've produced this report by two of their authors, domain experts, Marcus Cray and Roderick Lee. What have they done? They've taken effectively what is the Chinese PLA's textbook for its own people, explaining what their strategic and military thought is. They've taken the 2017 edition and 2020 edition. 2020 edition had been published by American National Defense University in August 2020, but nobody had translated this. Now this has been translated, and what these authors have done at China Aerospace Studies Institute, they have basically transposed one on the other to say this is 2017, this is 2020, and let us see what the differences are, because differences are subtle. A lot of it is common, but differences are subtle. So they picked out these differences. So in a way, they've reverse engineered the latest edition by using the previous one, and they have found 1200 editing changes. And in these changes, they've tried to figure out how China's strategic thought has evolved and how the world should respond to it. Now, they make it very clear that this is a textbook. This is not like a Bible, like the Bible of Chinese strategic thought, because a lot of things can happen in their current and future warfare and planning, which don't quite feature in this textbook. But this is as good a guide as you can get, because PLA leaders' minds are impossible to gauge. In any case, they will change as circumstances change. But they give two reasons why they say a study of this document or this comparative study or this ferreting out of differences between the 2017 thought and 2020 thought is so important. First reason is that this gives us the unique set of, I'm quoting them now, unique set of authoritative narratives by the PLA's sophisticated censorship system. If this has got published in the PLA, that means PLA's very comprehensive and sophisticated censorship system has passed it, which means what has come out is authoritative. It is endorsed by the Chinese higher establishment. That's important. The narratives are carefully crafted by designated teams of PLA academics and PLA intellectuals to reflect political and theoretical correctness of the PLA at the time of publication. So this has gone through all that due diligence by intellectuals, academics, by ideologues at the PLA to make sure this truly reflects their top boss's mind. As such, this establishes a critical baseline for more advanced PLA analysis, because unless you know these basics, what do you base your analysis on going ahead? Now, the next reason it is important to study this, and the next reason why this comparative study is so important is that from the first edition of this document, this textbook in 2001, the Chinese view of what they call as science of military strategy or SMS that we spoke about earlier to bait you into this cut the clutter. Although I know that if you're talking about Chinese strategic policy, we don't particularly need to bait you. We don't need any bait at all because it's so important for us and we get to read and discuss so little of it. In our country, we are still debating, we are still fighting the battle, the little mountain battles for the protection of chowkis or outposts in 1962. The world has moved on. So from the first edition in 2001, the authors say, Chinese view of science of military strategy has moved on a great deal. This book or this publication now, since 2001, when it came out the first time or when it surfaced the first time, it has become a more deliberate way to convey messages to a Western, which means readership, that's what the authors say, but to the world by and large, because India is not in the West, but India is even more concerned about Chinese strategic and military thought than I would say the Western world, because we are next door neighbors and we have such a large land border and trouble with the Chinese, a troubled history. And the authors then go on to say the framing and pruning of narratives contained in the SMS, Science of Military Strategy, presumably reflects how the PLA wants to be seen by the outside world. So this is not something that's leaked out of PLA. They've put it out. So they want the outside world to read their minds like this. Therefore, nuances contained in the Science of Military Strategy, particularly changes made by its authors over time when analyzed in correlation with PLA's activities in the field, can provide clues to the Chinese Communist Party's strategic intent and aspirations. And then the authors pick up 10 key themes. I will talk about these very briefly and I will try to explain each one to give you some interpretation. A summary of these themes has been put together by a very young person who's now still a student, who's now helping me with research, Anandita Mehrotra, and you will see those points running on the screen. So please check those out. This report, I will share the whole report also with you. It's not a very big report. It's only a 22-page report. Usually these reports tend to run into hundreds of pages, but it's only 22 pages. It's headlined, Unmasking the Devil in the Detail, A Comprehensive Analysis of the Science of Military Strategy, 2017 and 2020. And as I told you, this is from China Aerospace Studies Institute, from Air University of US Air Force at Maxwell Air Base, Alabama, USA. Now, here are the 10 highlights. And these are the 10 highlights. The headlines I give you for these highlights are actually headlines used in the report. I am not further nuancing them. I'm just using the same headlines, but there's a lot of jargon used there. I am trying to simplify these to help us all understand what these mean. So first, a truckload of Xi Jinping. This is the author's headline, not mine. But what this means is that this new SMS, compared to the last one in 2017, has a lot more of Xi Jinping, his thought, his speeches, his comments, his quips here. So this further confirms the impression that this is an army owned by the party. This army is controlled by the party. Party is controlled by Xi Jinping. So Xi Jinping controls the army. The army has to be personally loyal to him. So this reconfirms all of that. If anything, this now takes Xi Jinping's personality cult even further and makes it even stronger. So in summary, first and foremost, political education material, this SMS is. This is political education for PLA soldiers, officers, generals, brass, everybody, right? Because this is a political army. Unlike, say, the Indian Army, which is a professional army, US Army, British Army, these are professional armies. China is a country owned by the party. It's an ideological state. So its parties, its army is owned by the party. It is a political army. It's an ideological army. So that difference is further highlighted here. Now, so first of all, this document is first and foremost a political education material. There are many more references this time to Xi Jinping's speeches and catchphrases. PLA, then the authors are writing, PLA is expected to provide strategic support for strengthening CCP, Chinese Communist Party leadership, and China's socialist system. So once again, that eternal debate, are armies guardians of territorial frontiers of countries, or are armies also guardians of ideological frontiers of their nations? Now, this is a debate that keeps coming up in Pakistan all the time, right? And Pakistanis haven't quite answered it, although everybody knows the truth there in terms of what the army believes there. But in this case, the party makes it quite clear that this is the primary duty of the PLA, of the Chinese army, to guard, to provide strategic support for strengthening the CCP, Chinese Communist Party leadership, and China's socialist system. So PLA, Chinese PLA, is also the ideological guardian of China, or guardian of the ideological frontiers of China. That's very important. Then it goes on to say that PLA is also expected, I mean, some of these things are routine, sovereignty, territorial integrity of China. But importantly, this also said unification. Now, that is a message to Taiwan, but who knows? That might be a message to India as well, because China keeps on claiming it. It has now been repeating more often the claim that what is Arunachal? It is only southern Tibet, right? So they've said that it's also the army's responsibility to bring about unification, as they see it, of China. A current China dream of theirs that we talked about in the past. And second, also to expand China's overseas interests. Now, that's an interesting one, and that's a new addition. So the Chinese now think that their armed forces are strong enough to further their overseas interests. So they can go and operate far away. As we keep telling you, they now have a base in Djibouti, which sits right on top of that choke point between the Indian Ocean, Arabian Sea, and the Red Sea. And that's a choke point between Asia, Africa, and Europe, right? Bab el Mandab. That is where the Chinese sit, but they now think that their armies are strong enough to move way ahead. In fact, if anything, an interesting thing this time is that the Chinese have added an independent section in this SMS, in this Science of Military Strategy document. And that section is on political work planning. The introduction of this section suggests that political loyalty now plays an even bigger and more important role in Xi Jinping's military. That's a very important point. That is loyalty to the party, loyalty to the man. And the man, the leader, and the party then within themselves subsume the nation and the idea of patriotism. Number two, gloves off nuclear development. So this policy or this SMS document now tells you that China is shedding all shyness about nuclear development. They have dramatically changed their approach, and that is what the authors find. Now, this time, they've talked about PLA Air Force as a strategic power a lot more than before. In the past, they had focused a lot more on land and sea-based deterrence, that is missiles, etc. This time, they've talked about PLA Air Force much more than before. And they've talked about strategic strikes. Now, previously, as all armed forces and strategic communities do, the Chinese also made a distinction between a conventional strike and a strategic strike. Conventional is conventional weapons. Strategic means nuclear weapons, which is described by the euphemism strategic weapons. This time in this document, they seem to have banished that distinction. That's very important, which means, first of all, they are giving you ambiguity. In any case, China's no first use idea is totally ambiguous. But now they are giving you further ambiguity, and that's important. Next, de-emphasizing home field advantage. Now, in the past, the Chinese have said that, look, we have threats around here. We'll fight all this. We are at home. The Americans and the others will come and fight on our territory. So we have the home field advantage. Between the 2017 document and 2020, they have moved away from that. They have the confidence now to say, in fact, this might even indicate that they are moving beyond theaterization. because we say the Chinese have divided their armed forces into theaters. For example, the entire Tibet theater, or entire Indian theater is under one command, whereas India has the Eastern Command, the Central Command, the Western Command, the Northern Command, etc., etc. But now it looks like the Chinese are looking far ahead. They are looking beyond their territory, and they are looking beyond this home field advantage, and they are looking beyond theaterization. And the big difference that you see immediately is that in the past, when they've talked about their defense and their military posture, they've visualized their navy as being involved in the defense of the near seas. That is the East China Sea, South China Sea, etc. And this time they've removed that distinction. So this time they indicate that they can operate, or they'd like to operate, or they'll expect to operate in far seas, in distant countries and territories as well. So they are looking at fighting their wars far beyond their territories, but there is a catch there, because actually if you read the rest, and I will go over the rest, it sounds like they think now that they no longer need to fight a war. They have enough strategic deterrence built in, and just the fear that they could launch war on you will get most people to fall in line. So the next point is, again, a position of strength. So in the past, the Chinese laid great emphasis on a kind of guerrilla warfare, even in a strategic environment, in a large warfare environment. And they marked out one of the key characteristics of the future's war that China may face as asymmetric advantages. So they said, look, because the other power, basically they visualized America or America with its allies, they'll be much stronger than us. We should be able to use asymmetric advantages. Asymmetric advantages is like a guerrilla advantage, or what is described by the authors as the assassin's mace. Chup-chap aake, somebody kills you, right? Like that. Now they've given up this time on this asymmetric advantage, because they think, again, you can interpret it, you can only interpret it, but because there's a document available, this is open to interpretation. And the obvious conclusion is the Chinese no longer think that they face that disadvantage. So they also don't have to bother about asymmetric advantages. They have sufficient strength or sufficient power or force on this symmetrical plane itself. And why is it the Chinese think that this symmetric parity has come in? Because they've built a lot more logistics, and they built also something called PLA-SSF. That is the PLA Strategic Support Force. And they think that that takes care, that evens out many of these inequalities in the battlefield that existed in the past. Next point is, there is a new chapter added this time in this SMS on Joint Logistics Support Force. Now, Joint Logistics Support Force simply means, again, armies like acronyms, it simply means that one logistics force which will supply Army, Navy, Air Force, strategic forces, rocket forces, etc., etc., etc. And this will lead to improved control, that's the next point, improved control and tolerance of uncertainty. Now, what is tolerance of uncertainty? That's a very interesting concept. So when you see the situation between Russia and the rest, and Europe and America over Ukraine, that there is uncertainty. What will the Russians do tomorrow? How will Biden react? So Russians have uncertainty on their side, and Biden and Europe have uncertainty on their side. How much of that uncertainty you can tolerate and for how long depends on the kind of confidence you might have, and how quickly you can recover from a surprise, and how fast and effectively you can deliver a counter punch. So again, the authors say that from this reading, looks like the Chinese have now built a larger level of tolerance for uncertainty, because they now think that they have much greater maturity in their planning concepts. And that is what also means that they can also use a lot more brinkmanship than in the past. So next point, that next phase of jointness is coming. Now, the authors say that you can see an inflection point in Chinese strategic military thought, in the sense that they've now introduced another term and another acronym called MIJO, M-I-J-O. So that's Multi-Domain Integrated Joint Operation. Earlier, they always said IJO, Integrated Joint Operation. Now they say Multi-Domain Integrated Joint Operation. This is its change in the language in 2020 compared to 2017. This has been done with a purpose. So authors think, the PLA thinks they've made sufficient progress now to move from IJO to NIJO, but they are not yet clear, they are not fully clear, the authors, what multi-domain means. So there are lots of strategic experts within our audience. I leave it to you to figure that out. I think a lot of these strategic experts in the world who watch China will be very closely trying to understand what the Chinese mean here. Next point, the Chinese now are putting a lot more emphasis on conventional defense or conventional deterrence than on nuclear deterrence. Why again? Because we told you that they had increased their tolerance for uncertainty, because they now think that their conventional military power is strong enough, so strong that it can be a deterrence by itself. They don't even need to use nuclear deterrence. Nuclear deterrence, if anything, is a defensive deterrence. Whereas if they want to achieve their objectives without fighting a war, then they have sufficient conventional muscle power now to get there, to meet their objectives. Once again, the authors say that in the Chinese context, they've redefined the term strategic. Strategic all over the world is used in terms of nuclear. Now the Chinese have begun to use strategic also in terms of very strong conventional deterrence. And that shows that improved capabilities in conventional area have given the Chinese the confidence that they can get strategic deterrence only with conventional ways, without fighting a war. And that's where the document talks about immediate and early attacks, for example, to cripple the adversary's command and control, electronic warfare, missile and air defense system. So the adversary feels blinded and also feels like, I don't know where to go, I don't know what to see. And that's when a kind of mental destruction of the adversary takes place, and you can achieve deterrence without fighting a war and without even rattling your nuclear weapons, because that becomes complicated. And if you're hearing that noise, that particularly loud aircraft noise, that's because a C-17 has just flown past, sort of well-timed, given the fact that we're talking about strategic logistics and things. So the next point, for the Chinese PLA is that now they are getting the fusion of threeizations right. Now, what is threeization? Now, threeization in the Chinese PLA's context is the integration of three things. That is mechanization, informatization, and intelligentization, right? Now, in the past, they had focused a lot more on mechanization and informatization. Now they are saying all three, and they are saying all three should be integrated for their military. So now how does it work? Again, the authors have interpreted it for us. They say mechanization is the foundation of military power. So your military power should be mechanized. So it should move quickly, get someplace quickly, move out of someplace quickly. It should be mechanized and also deliver a quick punch effectively, even before the adversary can respond. Number two, informatization is the lead. If mechanization is the foundation, informatization is the lead, then intelligentization is the direction. That tells you where should this lead go, a lead on which this foundation is riding. So this has been emphasized a lot more than before. Then, next point, strategic support as secret sauce. So we told you that Chinese have set up a PLA strategic support force. This was set up in 2015-16 and they talked about it. Now they are talking about a JLSF, which is Joint Logistics Support Force. And they think that support is very important, support of in logistics jointly is very important in modern warfare. And what kind of support is this? Three kinds the authors pick up from this document, this Chinese document. Number one, strategic intelligence support. Number two, strategic information assurance, right? And number three, strategic reconnaissance and electronic warfare. All these are very important. And if you get these right, then you're great on what is conventionally called ISR, or intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance. That is complete. Now the authors have a bunch of conclusions. Some of them are a bit technical. So if you're interested, please read the whole report. But one phrase catches my eye, and I shall try and explain it. I don't know how how well I can do that. When the authors list their three preliminary conclusions, so the most important conclusion is the PLA's redefinition of what is called as a computation continuum. What does it mean? It means keeping competition below armed conflict to moving into armed conflict. Now, stronger a nation is, stronger a military power is, the longer it can allow this continuum of competition without actually going into a real war. And that is what the Chinese are working on, because the Chinese have now given us the indication, it's also a logical thing, that the stronger you are conventionally, the more deterrence you have, the more the luxury of this competition continuum. Jagarte jao without going to war, and you think that you can achieve your objectives. Like, and second, again quite important for India also, that if your conventional deterrence becomes sufficiently powerful, then you don't even need the nuclear deterrence anyway. You can keep that for the rainy day when your country or your key strategic interests come under a threat. So the stronger your conventional military is, the stronger your conventional deterrence is, the greater the luxury of this competition continuum. You can engage your adversary in a longer competition without actually lapsing into warfare. That's important. And how will that be achieved in the end? That will be achieved with, as this document says, with strategic awareness, integration of forces, a very robust planning process, and control of forces and new technologies. So for all these reasons, that this new Chinese textbook or their document on SMS or Science of Military Strategy is important. We should read it and try and understand where the Chinese are coming from, because you know what? The Chinese are not going to go away any place soon.